Okay, let us now continue with our foray into Rabbi Hanina's Ganakohanim. So what I'd like to do this morning before we begin is to just review the bare bone structure of what's happened. Because the truth is the bare bone structure is very, very clear. There's been an awful lot of information, and that information in terms of Shakla Vataria, that is the back and forth business of the Gemara, can get very, very difficult because there's so many factors to keep in mind. But the bare bones is very, very straightforward and leads us today finally to get a deeper appreciation of the way that this Mishnah was structured. How beautiful it is that Rabbi Yochanan was able to really bring it down to a very, very simple kind of structure, which we're going to see today. So basically what happened is in that the Gemara, we were talking about how to do Bir Chometz. And that led us into what we thought originally, Rabbi Gamliel, that was like going to be some type of compromise, that there's a difference between chometz that's truma and chometz that's chulin, and that in the fifth hour we're still going to allow you to eat truma because we don't want to be ma'abed the truma. We got involved in that whole discussion. And that led us to consider what the issues are of burning chometz, whether you'd have to burn the truma that was actually tahor truma separately, or whether there's an idea that once something is going to be ruined anyway, that it would be okay to burn it together. So you could burn even the truma tahor. And it started with bir chometz. But obviously that led us into all types of issues in terms of understanding what is the meaning of the different levels of truma, how would they affect truma, when is it a deraisa, when is it a derabbanan, and how is it that it can be communicated? Can it be communicated directly from Ochlin to Ochlin? Can it be communicated only Ochlin through Mashke? All kinds of various things which made this sugya complex. But in terms of the simple structure of the Mishnah, here's what happened. We had two shitas in the Mishnah. We had Rabbi Hanina Sgan HaKohanim, and we had Rabbi Akiva. It was difficult for us to discern what exactly is the difference between them. Both of them essentially were giving what appeared to be different examples of how it is that in the Beis HaMikdash, nothing to do with Pesach, in the Beis HaMikdash, the deal is that any level of Tumah on Basar Kodesh or on things of Kodesh are going to be Machayev you to burn them and to get rid of them. And that's a Chiyev that we learn out from Noser and all of the Psulei HaMikdashim. They require Sreifa, sometimes B'mokom Kodesh, sometimes somewhere else. But in any event, Sreifa is very important and therefore ties directly into our Biur. And mind you that Rabbi Yehuda, who says that Ein Biur Chometz Ela Sreifa, actually learns that out from Noser. So therefore, this Mishnah really does fit directly. There is a connection between Nosar and the whole deal of Chometz. And of course, if you look in the parshas of the Torah that speak about the Yisr of Achilas Chometz and the Hakrovas Korban Pesach, it always talks about Nosar. Now, even though the Nosar over there is in terms of, you know, make sure you finish your Korban Pesach at night and on Nosar in Menuhat Boker, but Nosar is a big factor in all the parshas of the Korban Pesach. And therefore, it's by no means a non sequitur on the deeper level that when we're starting to be misasik in the hakrovas hakarban and hachomis for the hakrovas hakarban, getting rid of the chomis biyom harishon, which is where we're still holding here until we get into kol sha'ah and the dinim of chomis during Pesach, that we ought to be indeed talking about the inyonim not only of the biur then, but how it relates to the chiyuv of sreifa. Fine. So we started discussing that issue in a Mishnah, and it seemed to be unrelated to our Inyan of Pesach. And we thought perhaps it was just being brought in because of its similarity to the fact that we needed to burn chometz, even if it was truma, and normally it's usher to do that, and so on. Okay. So one gave an example, it turned out. Rabbi Hanina's Ganakonim gave an example of Basar that was a Shlishi B'Kodesh, and that it would be mutter to turn this Basar into a sheni. That's how we ended up understanding it when it said Vlad Atum and Vlad Vlad. And Rabbi Akiva added to that, that even if we were talking about Truma, and Truma is only Pasul if it becomes a Shlishi, it does not warrant the name Tomei, because it cannot be Metomei anything else, that nonetheless the halacha would be that you could turn it into, now you're possibly would say you could even turn it into a Rishon, and it could end up becoming Tomeim, and you could do it Midiraisa. So those were various Hosafot that Rabbi Akiva was mentioning. So far, no direct implications for our sugya, because after all, to say that therefore you would be allowed to burn Tomei Truma. With Torah Truma, to be Matayer, the Torah Truma, I mean, well, where would we get that from? Erev Pesach has nothing to do with Boser Kodesh, that's Tomei. And why would it be Mut? For some reason, Rabbi Meir at that point interjects in the Mishnah, and that makes us think, for sure, he's got to be referring to Rabbi Chanina's Kana Kohanim, and he's got to be referring to Rabbi Akiva, or at least one of them. And he interjects and says, well, you see from that, that you could also, on Erev Pesach, where anyway you're going to be burning the Truma, it wouldn't matter if you burnt Truma that was Tahar, completely Tahar? I mean, we haven't been discussing doing anything that's completely Tahar, but anyway, that's what he said. You could take Truma that's Tahar, and you can burn that Truma Tahar, even with Truma that is Mamish Tame. Now that, Rabbi Yossi responds, what in the world? What does that have to do with anything? Where do you see that? And he doesn't even explain why. Where do you see that? He just says, no, that makes no sense. Ena min amida. Fine. Then all of a sudden, Rabbi Yossi throws in what appears to be a non sequitur. And he says, look, even Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, where we did find that Rabbi Yoshua is Mekel about Tuma that had a suffix, he only said kulas about how to deal with that Truma itself. That's a suffix, but he never said that you could just go straight ahead and burn it together with Truma. I mean, that you could burn a Truma that was really Tahar with the Tameh. All he was willing to do was to be Mekel on a suffix. Now, the Mishnah simply did not add up to us. We didn't understand where did Rabbi Meir think he had a Raya from. Why wasn't Rabbi Yossi more descriptive about why he says Eina min Amida? And why all of a sudden are we bringing in this Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer discussion, which nobody ever mentioned anywhere in the Mishnah? That is what we were left with, which provided us all of the different keys to the ways in which we could interpret the Mishnah. So the first thing we did was we gave two possible interpretations. One, which seemed to answer the Midivrehem of Rabbi Meir. Yes, from this above discussion of Rabbi Chanina's Kana Kohanim and Rabbi Akiva, I think that we can derive what we derive for Pesach. But it didn't help us very much for making sense of the Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer discussion. And the other, which made perfectly good sense of the Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer discussion, but did not make much sense of like what possible connection there was to Rabbi Chanina's Kana Kohanim. So it wasn't really a very, very satisfactory conclusion until we came upon Rabbi Yochanan. So let's just remember what the two approaches were. We had our first approach, which the Gemara was just mentioning as part of the Shaka Vataria. We didn't say who said this approach, but our first approach was that, look, we never did describe, did we, whether we were talking about a Truma Derabbanan, a Tuma Derabbanan, or a Tuma Deraisa in that Vlad HaTuma. No, we never did. So maybe what Rabbi Meir assumes is the pshat in the Mishnah is that Rabbi Chanina's Kana Kohanim was talking about a Vlad Tuma that's Derabbanan, and he was surprisingly allowing you to take something that is only Tamei Midrabbanan, which means that, wow, Midiraisa, it's completely Tahar, and you're allowed to burn it together with Truma that is Tamei Deraisa. Gee whiz, I mean, why would you be able to do that? So maybe you could do the same thing over here. Perhaps the issue that Rabbi Meir was identifying was, well, if anyway, this Truma is going to be destroyed. So in the case of the Beis HaMikdash, the issue was the Basar was anyway Tameh and therefore needed to be burned. And the issue on Erev Pesach is that the Truma is anyway Chametz and therefore is going to have to be burned. And because of that, since we're talking about a Tuma, which is only Derabbanan, and therefore for all intents and purposes, Midiraisa, it's perfectly okay, I want to take that and say that in the sixth hour, where again, Midiraisa, everything is fine, the Chometz is an Usser, but in the sixth hour, the Rabbanan say it's Usser, so that's the equivalent of the Rabbanan saying that it's Tameh, and nonetheless, we were allowed to put it together with Truma, that was actual, I'm saying, the same way we could put the Kodesh together with Basar that was actually kosher from the Torah and was completely Torah. You could do the same thing over here. Now, remember that that is not as dramatic as it seems, because the Gemara was taking for granted that actually, even if you put these things together And one is Tomei D'Oraisa, and the other one is completely Torah Midiraisa, only Tomei Midirabanan. Really, Midiraisa, you're not doing anything wrong at all. So it was why is that? Because the basar is food, and food is not Mitame food, Midiraisa. And we were going according to Ravina, who says that that's true, whether it's Truma, whether it's Kodesh, whether it's Chulin, food stuff, as opposed to liquids, which talk about separately, food stuff is not Matame other food stuff. So basically, all that happened over here is that the Rabbanan was saying, according to Rabbi Meir, now this makes a lot of sense. The Rabbanan was saying, look, you can be Matame something that was Tame only Midrabbanan by putting it together with a D'Oraisa, but of course, you're not really going to be doing anything by doing that midiraisa, because all that you're doing is creating a new tumah midirabbanan, because the rabbanan said that a foodstuff could be matame a foodstuff. So therefore, you're making things worse, but only midirabbanan. Okay, so we allow you to do that. So Rabbi Meir says, look, if you allow me to do that when it comes to basar kodesh, so then you should allow me to do that in terms of the derabbanan. I mean, the rabbanan, what's the difference? Whether the reason that this is not usable is because it's tuma, or the reason it's not usable is because it's iser. Basically, the rabbanan have taken it off the table. When the rabbanan create a gezera, remember that the mechanism of the gezera needs to be understood separately. There's a very important point, and it's a subtle point. The mechanism for the gezerah needs to be understood separately from the results of the gezerah. Whatever the problem in Rabbanan is, why do I have to listen? Because the Torah said, listen, right? Anything that they say, don't turn aside. That means there's one iser. Always, whether we're talking about not eating tuma midrabanan, whether we're talking there's something being not kosher midrabanan, whether we're talking about something being chametz midrabanan, whether we're talking about the hour of the day that makes it an iser of chametz. Okay, those are different ways in which the rabbanan asserted the authority to say do not eat. But it all boils down to the same thing. Lo tasur yamin v'smal. This is what they told you to do. Therefore, says Rabbi Meir, who cares whether we're talking about Tuma, or whether we're talking about the hour, or whether we're talking about a din of Trum, about a din of whether something can be Matami, the other thing. The bottom line is, it's all the same. The Rabbanan said, sixth hour, the Truma is inedible. Okay, great. And the Rabbanan said that you can be Matami, another thing, even though food really isn't Matami. Great. So if we find in one location that you can do that, namely in the Beis HaMikdash, where you had food, and there it was needed to be burned. And nonetheless, we were going to be taking something that was completely tahar, because it was only a v'lad tumah derabbanan, and you could still derabbanan be metami it by touching it to other food, derabbanan. And the rabbanan said, that's okay. So it's the same thing over here. And that seems so reasonable that it wasn't really very clear what it was that Rabbi Yossi had against it, unless Rabbi Yossi differentiated. And Rabbi Yossi says, look, Tuma and Isser are two different things. I mean, I don't care about your logic. That is to say that the bottom line is it's all the impact of the Rabbanan. That's not what's important to me. What's important to me is the modalities that the Rabbanan asked me to behave. And therefore, something being Isser cannot be compared to something being tummy. Why would I be allowed to be matame something just because it's us? This is the way that we understood the conversation. Then we had all these other things. We had to explain away, okay, why bring in Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer? That I'm not going to review with you. You can go over that. But what's important in the Mishnah, that was the way we understood one take on the Mishnah. The other take on the Mishnah was Reish Lakish. That was Bar Kapora's take. And Bar Kapora said, no, it doesn't make sense to say that we're talking about over here v'lad tumah derabbanan necessarily. And therefore, how could we bring a riot to the case where we're dealing with something that was only derabbanan and which is the Isser of Chometz on the sixth hour is only derabbanan? You can't bring a riot to that. I'll tell you what the riot was. Actually, Rabbi Meir was referring to something entirely different. And that was the fact that Rabbi Yeshua is very makel in a case where you've got to save a lot of money by making truma, which anyway is going to be ruined. It's not tame. It's not currently usher. It's just going to be ruined. And he said, well, in that case, then you're allowed to be Matame Biadayim. Okay, so over here, says Rabbi Meir, it's going to be ruined. You're about to burn it up. So if you're about to burn it up, then for God's sake, you could certainly be allowed to be Matame Biadayim. It's the same exact case as the wine that was about to fall in to the Kulin. And that was the Raya. And Rabbi Yossi said, no, it's not the same. And he didn't explain why. No, it's not the same. So we're left to guess why. No, it's not the same. Okay, so we say, no, it's not the same because over there it involves a loss of money. I mean, you must admit that's not a very elegant Mishnah. It doesn't give us much information. And instead, it just seems to be confusing. Comes along Rabbi Yochanan to the rescue yesterday and says, actually, the Mishnah is very elegant. And what's happening over here is that between the lines, the very fact that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi are arguing is something that provides the key to understand why they're arguing, and that's exactly why Rabbi Yossi does not get into the details of why it's Eina Min Hamida. But before Rabbi Yochanan gets to his elegant explanation of the Mishnah, he changes a lot of our assumptions by making one difference. And what Rabbi Yochanan said was, look, Rabbi Yossi would certainly have agreed that in the seventh hour, you actually would be able to derive from Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKohanim, you would be able to derive the din that Rabbi Meir derives. Because actually, the issue over here is merely that in the sixth hour, which you're claiming is the problem, and that you're allowed to be Matami anyway, Rabbi Meir, it's only Aser Min Rabbonan. Now, how does that follow from the case of Rabbi Chanina's Gan HaKohanim, where why would it only be Min Rabbonan? Because I don't buy into the fact that we're talking about over here specifically a case where it's a Vlatu Min Rabbonan. But if it were Aser Min Raisa and it's already the seventh hour, well, then yes, indeed, then it's the same halacha. Now, that turns everything upside down, because then it means that Rabbi Yochanan says, actually, Rabbi Yossi never made an assertion that you cannot compare Isser to Tuma. He never said that. He was ready to compare Isser to Tuma. And in fact, he says, I'd agree with you that when something is Usser, you're allowed to be Metameit. But I think it has to be Usser D'Oraisa, not just D'Rabbanan. So then the question that we had was, well, okay, so then if that's the case, what exactly does he have against the words of Rabbi Chanina, the way that Rabbi Meir was learning the Rabbi Chanina's Gan HaKohanim? If we were talking about, as Rabbi Yochanan said, Rabbi Meir's learning it out from Rabbi Chanina's Gan HaKohanim, then why exactly is it that he is saying that it's not the same? We never explained Eina Min Hamida. In the event that we'd be talking about the same case, and I've shown you that that's certainly a possibility, why would it be Eina Min? Don't tell me Eina Min Hamida. You want to argue on the case, you can argue on the case. Well, what's wrong with my logic? That's where we left off yesterday, and it's there that everything suddenly clicks. Because as, in fact, Rabbi Yochanan has brought us to understand, the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi does not need any new information. It's information that has been with us for a long time throughout many sugyas, and it's simply another very brilliant application of an ongoing fundamental machlokas in which the moment you hear Rabbi Yossi saying, no, that doesn't follow, you realize, well, of course it doesn't follow, not according to Rabbi Yossi. In which case, I now have a key to understand, okay, what is the big machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, which would allow this to be just another expression, and that requires no additional information or discussion about cases? Ah, we know that there's a standing machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi about the status of mashkim. Now, that could explain everything, and that's where we got up to yesterday. So let's take a look at the question on Tetvav Amud Beis. Today's daf is Tet Zayin. And right at the bottom of Tetvav Amud Beis, we were left with the question of, if you're telling me, Rabbi Yochanan, that according to Rabbi Yossi, we do have a right to compare Isser to Isser, then why can't we compare Isser de Rabbanan to the Tumah de Rabbanan Erev Pesach? Amai Eina Hi Hamida. It certainly follows perfectly well. Mida umida makes a heck of a lot of sense, and you seem to just be arbitrarily claiming that it's different. I don't understand. What makes you say that it's somehow different? Why is it different? If you admit that that's true, and we're talking about actually burning basar that was tameh only midrabanan together with basar that was tameh midiraisa, so why can't I burn chometz that is asur midrabanan together with the truma that is tameh midiraisa? What do you have against what I said? And the answer is that the case is what's mechayev the difference, because the same exact case will have different dinim and tuma. That's the point. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, we were talking about a case where the basar was tameh, but you know how it became tameh? It became tameh because of mashkin. These mashkin had touched the sheretz. Okay, so now, once mashkin touched a sheretz, obviously mashkin cannot be metameh kelim, but the question is, what would be the din about this mashkin? So Rabbi Meir was going l'shitato, and Rabbi Yossi was going l'shitato. And what happened over here is that an av hatuma actually was that which was metame the mashkin. Rabbi Meir holds, I don't care what happens at that point forwards, because mashkin cannot be metame ochlin. They can't be metame anything. And that's Rabbi Meir's shita. Therefore, according to me, the tuma that we have over here, since it came through mashkin, is, by definition, a tuma de rabbana, which means that the meat, in this case, the basar kodesh, was only tameh min rabbana. And if Rabbi Hanina said that the Kohanim used to burn it together with the other stuff, which was tameh, where it's actually tameh, so then you can see that something that is osir min rabbana would be also mutter to burn. That's what I'm saying, and it follows very, very logically. Now, this itself in Rabbi Yochanan is also a total change from what we said until now. Because what we said until now is that there never was anybody who claimed that you could do anything midiraisa, right? Because we were going a libet ravina, and we said that it's not that we really are doing something to meet that star midiraisa, and we're making a tameh midiraisa. No, we're not making anything tameh, not in the Beis HaMikdash, not over here, because ochlin cannot be metameh ochlin. That's what we said. So it's really basically a question of whether the Rabbanan were gozer about putting two different levels of tumah together, and one being metameh, the other midirabbanan. Now that's all changed. Now we're saying that it isn't true. We are talking about taking something and making it tameh, even midiraisa. But the point over here is that since the tumah has created a situation where it is usur to eat this truma, there's no longer a din of mishmeret on it. And when you have something that is tameh already in the Beis HaMikdash, then it's already tameh. So there's no din of taking care of it. That's the point that I'm making over here. I don't care what the reason is, either because it's tameh, so therefore I don't have to watch it, or because it's chometz, therefore I don't have to watch it. And that's true even if it's a derabbanan. The question is that Rabbi Yossi over here is going l'shitato. Rabbi Yossi says, listen, tumas mashkin is a deraisa, and mashkin can be metame other thing, and we're going to see this machlokas, which means that the basar that became tame with the mashkin was tame midiraisa. And when Rabbi Hanina said, I burned it together with things that are on a higher madrega, all he was doing was saying, you can make something which is tame midiraisa more tame. Fine, so then that teaches me, says Rabbi Yossi, that if something is osur midiraisa, namely at the seventh hour on Erev Pesach, so I can make it tameh, indeed, 100% true. But where do you see over here that something that is tameh midirabanan? And of course, Rabbi Meir says, what do you mean? Where do I see? The same case that you claim is a deraisa, I claim is a derabanan. So all that we're talking about, everything is the same. The discussion revolves around the simple case in which no issues come up about what are we talking about and how did it become Tum in the first place. It's very simple. There's a machlokas straightforward between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir about what the din is of the same case that is the first case that suggests itself to you. There's no difference between all the complicated things that we had about how is something going to be mitame and so on. It's all the same. Where do we know that there is such a machlokas? So now we begin today's daf. The Tanya. If we take a look in the Braita, we now see the machlokas. And that is, the Braita talks about a suffik tumah. Now, we're talking over here about a suffik tumah in a reshut hayachid, which, if it's deoraita, we will go lechumra. But if it's only mirabanan, then we won't go lechumra. So the Braita says like this, if you have any kind of suffik tumah that is nogea mashkin, and it's in a reshut hayachid, then those mashkin will be tameh. Li tame with a yud means lehit tame, to become tame themselves. So for them to be tame themselves, yes. But in to determine whether they would be metame something else, which is only a derabbanan, for that, there's no suffik. And that's a derabbanan, a suffik derabbanan lakula, and it would be tahar. So says Rabbi Meir. So in other words, Rabbi Meir is saying that midiraisa, mashkin can be tame on their own, but they cannot be metame anything else. V'chein haya Rabbi Elazar omer kedvarav, which seems to be saying that Rabbi Elazar holds the same thing across the board. We're going to question that in a moment and see it's not true. Rabbi Yehuda omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, oh, no. Mashkin can be metame anything. Midiraisa. And this is a completely different approach to the one that we've had all along, because he holds that mashkin can even be metame kalim midiraisa, which we never heard of before. We always thought for sure the gzera of tumas mashkin is a derabona. Now, what is the basis of this? Because the lushan of the pusik is, when we're talking about the tumah of the sheretz and so on, so it says, mikola ochel asher yeachel, talking about this kli that's got things in it of ochlin umashkin, and sheretz falls into it, mitami the kli, what's the din of the ochlin umashkin inside? So the Torah says, mikol ha'ochel asher ye'achel, asher yavo alav mayim, as long as it had hechsher, then the din is yitma. V'chol mashke asher yishate v'chol kli yitma. The question over here, gentlemen, revolves around that word. Shall yitma be read yitma? Will itself become tameh? Or since the Torah chose the term yitma instead of tameh, it's meant to be merames to yitameh. It can also be metameh something else. Okay, that's machlokas here between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. But there's also a question of how to read asher yishate b'chol kli. What in the world does b'chol kli have to do with it? What do you mean b'chol kli? Who cares whether you drink it in a cup or you drink it? I mean, why mention that? So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the mentioning of b'chol kli is actually a remez that the negiya in the kli, v'chol mashkeh asher yishateh b'chol kli yitma, which means yitameh. It can even be metameh kelim. Fine. Oh, it's a completely different nekuda. And that is a unique shita of Rabbi Yehuda. So even if the mashkin, you have a suffix that the mashkin touch a kli, if it's Rishus HaYachid, Sveiko Tame. Fine. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon says, no, wait a minute. It's true that it does say Yitma, which means Yitame, but where the heck do you get the idea that it could be Matame, even Kalim? It only says Abasar, the Mikola Ochel, and then it says V'chol Mashka. Doesn't say anything about being Matame Kalim. So therefore, it depends. If the question was on the mashkin themselves, or the question was whether those mashkin touched ochlin, fine. So then, indeed, the ochlin would be tamei midiraisa because it's suffik tumah reshus hayachid. But when it comes to mashkin touching kalim, mashkin are not tamei kalim midiraisa, and therefore, it would certainly be tahar when it comes to the din of kalim. Okay, so far what we have is three shitas. We're going to see that there's more than three shitas, but the three shitas are, according to Rabbi Meir, mashkin alone become tame, but any extension of that to be metame anything else is an extension to Rabbanan. According to Rabbi Yossi, joined here by Rabbi Shimon, but according to Rabbi Yossi, the halacha is that mashkin are actually metame other things, foodstuffs. And then we had the special shita of Rabbi Yehuda, even Benogea Kalim. But as far as we're concerned, there's an obvious, clear-cut machlokas here between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, and that is, can Mashkin be Metame other things bin Yoraisa? And that would explain our case, and everything follows just gloriously, and the Mishnah has given us a key to its understanding by just throwing in the words Eina Min Amida. All right. But by the way, before we go further, says the Gemara, is it really true what you said that Rabbi Lozer agrees with Rabbi Meir that Mashkin themselves are Tame? It's only that they can't be Metame other things? I thought that Rabbi Elazar held that Mashkin are not Tmeim at all. V'sava Rabbi Elazar, Mashkin itul Tuma ba'olam, v'tani Rabbi Elazar ain Tuma la'mashkin kol ikar. There is no such thing as Tumas Mashkin in the Torah. The Torah does not ever talk. Now, that's mind-boggling because there's so many psukim. The Torah does talk about Mashkin being Tmeim. And obviously, we're going to have to figure out what in the world that's supposed to mean. But here comes Rabbi Elazar, and he is asserting there is no such thing as Tumas Mashkin. So why did you claim that Rabbi Elazar agrees with Rabbi Meir? Rabbi Meir says there's Tuma to Mashkin. It just can't be Metame other things. And Rabbi Elazar says there is no such animal as Tumas Mashkin in the Torah. Wow. Okay, if Rabbi Elazar holds that, then of course there are now four shitas. Mashkim do not have tuma. Mashkin have tuma, but they can't be metame other things. Mashkin have tuma, but they can be metame food, but not kalim. Mashkin have tuma, and they can metame anything, food, kalim, and so on. Those are the four shitas that are coming up over here. Before I continue, I just had a remez of a phone call from Rabbi Kaplan, who asks me to remind you, please, there is a Hanukkah Magbit as an excuse to be able to get money to extremely needy families, especially in these times, and a rich individual, an American, has agreed to match all of the funds that he manages to collect, and therefore your every dollar is multiplied by two. Okay. So please, you can let me know, and I will lay out the money for you. You don't have to get the money to me now, and we'll make sure that these funds will be given out for Hanukkah, doubled. Okay, so now getting back to this. So why in the world did we come to that conclusion? Now, before we begin the next piece, I need to tell you a new piece of information, which we mentioned briefly into the introduction, but if we understand it today, it will go very smoothly. So here's the deal. We know that in Masechet Idiot, Yossi ben Yoezer comes to be made, and what he's made on is Mashke Beit, he says this in Aramaic, so it isn't very clear what he's saying. Mashke Beit Matbechaya Dechan. Now that means that all types of liquids that are to be found in the area where the mitbachayim, now the mitbachayim was the area to the tzafon of the mizbeach, between the edge of the mizbeach and the wall of the azara, and that was the area where they did the shechita, and they would wash off the meat. It was full of blood and water that had been used for washing off the animals before being able to be makriv of the basar or the oil, or being able to be makriv of the emurim. In any event, he says, in the Beis HaMikdash, you should know, all of that is dechan. All of that is tohar. So that even if it touches tuma, it doesn't become tummy. Now, there are two girsaot, and there are different ways of repeating what it was that Yossi ben Yoezer said. The simple way is mashke beit med mit bechaya, like in the mitbach. The mitbachaya is the area of the mitbach, the kitchen area, so to speak. But the other one is with a dalet, mad bechaya. Mad bechaya in Aramaic means mizbeach, the liquids on the mizbeach. Now, there's a big difference between them, because in the slaughter area, there was no oil, there was no wine. On the mizbeach, all there was blood and water. On the mizbeach, there was also yayin v'shemen. If the girsa is the mad bechaya, then it would be saying that even wine and oil in the Beis HaMikdash was tohar if it touched tuma. And we're going to see major differences between those things as we go through the sugya over here. That's one issue we need to understand. The other issue we need to understand is that there's two very different approaches to Yossi ben Yoezer. One approach is that this is a magic din, meaning that it's halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, and that it has no relationship to the overall approach of dinim of tuma v'taira in the Torah. Let's set that aside because our Gemara does not initially entertain that kind of possibility. So the way that we understood it is, well, if there is a difference between how to deal with liquids in the Beis HaMikdash and anywhere else, that could only be an expression of the fact that the Rabbanan, we already know this from Shabbos, the Rabbanan did not want to make gezeiras of Tumah in the Beis HaMikdash. That's what it means. So it must be that the entire idea of things being Tumah if they're liquids is actually a Rabbanan idea. And the Rabbanan did not put that on to the same way that when Gozer Shvus, when it comes to Shabbos and other things in the Beis HaMikdash, they did not want there to be additional Tumah in the Beis HaMikdash, which would cause terrible things of ruining Karbonis and so on and so forth. And therefore, they weren't Gozer in the Beis HaMikdash. That's the way we take it. Now, if that's the case, what's left to understand is, what does Dechan mean, this Aramaic term, Tohar? In what sense Tohar? They themselves are tahar? They're tahar from being metame other things? And there's one other possibility. Neither of the above. They are dechan in the sense that if they fall on Euchlin, they will not be makshir the Euchlin to be mekabel tuma. So there's three possibilities. Now, the Gemara is going to be interweaving those possibilities in order to be able to answer the various shitas. But once you understand the basic idea, now it becomes very clear. Okay, so we start off with the Mishnah in Idyos, which is Heyid Yossi ben Yoezer, Ishtreda, two different things he said. First of all, Al Kamsa, which is the name of a particular type of locust that he says that's kosher. Dechan, that's Tohar. Not Nogay us today. Al Mashkin, Beit Matbechaya, that it's Dechan. Now, depending on how you read that, when Reb Eliezer, the implications of Yossi ben Yoezer, depending on how you read it, are going to be very different. Because if you understand the Yossi ben Yoezer saying what Shmuel said he said, that doesn't mean that the Mashkin are Tohar. It means that they're Dechan Milatami Tumat Acherim. They won't make anything else Tummy. That's all that he meant. But it's certainly Tumat Atzmam Yeshlem. They are Tummy themselves. Then, fine. Everything would be able to work out okay. But if you understand Yossi ben Yoezer the way Rav understands Yossi ben Yoezer, and he says it's totally Dechan, it's not even the Metame Tumas Atzman, so then if that's what Yossi ben Yoezer is saying, then it makes perfectly good sense to say Ein Tumah L'Mashkin Kol Iker at all, because V'Haraya, in the Beis HaMikdash, there was no Tumah L'Mashkin at all. Omer of Nachman Bar Yitzchak, you're 100% right. Rebbe Lutzer disagrees with Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Lutzer actually says Mashkin are not even Tameh. Rebbe Meir says they're Tameh, but they're not Metameh. And they're not saying the same thing. But when we said that Rebbe Lutzer agrees, we meant Rebbe Lutzer agrees to one part of what Rebbe Meir said. Namely, Mashkin will not be Metameh anything else. Didn't mean he agrees across the board. And he says that they're Tameh even by themselves. That he doesn't agree to. So when he said it's the same, it was going Achada on one element of his words. Wait a minute. Can you read? It says kidvarav, okay? Dvarav means his words, not one word out of his words. The nefishi, a lot of things, meaning both elements. Ve'od, doesn't it say v'chein? He said exactly the same things. I mean, if you want to tell me that he said something similar, you would say ve'omar Rebbe Lutzer kidvaro. Okay, but I mean, here it's clearly saying that he agrees with him across the board. So how do you explain that? I don't. Okay, Kasha, I don't know how to explain it. There seems to be a Styrian and a Belezer, but the bottom line is we have four shitas. That's all I know about. Fine. Okay, now, getting to the Machlokas. So Rav Gufa, Rav Amar, let's try and understand this. Rav says the Mashkin themselves are actually Tahar. Okay, Shmuel says no, the Mashkin themselves are not Tahar, but they can't be Metame anything else. So Rav, who says that the Mashkin themselves in the Beis HaMikdash are Tahar, obviously holds that the entire idea of Tumas Mashkin, the concept of Tumas Mashkin, is a fiction that the Rabbanan created, and they did not assert that din in the Beis HaMikdash. So Tumas Mashkin itself is the Rabbanan were only Goyzrin in other places. Mashkin the Alma, when it came to come to the Beis HaMikdash, they were careful not to be mar betum in the Beis HaMikdash, and b'mashkin the Beit Matbechaya lo gazru. Shmuel says, no, it only means the Chan mitami tumata cherim, but they do have their own tumah because he holds, absolutely, Mashkin, what are you talking about? Mashkin are not tamei midiraisa? Of course Mashkin are tamei midiraisa. Midiraisa. The only issue is that the extension that they can be betame other things, that's a Darabbanan. So that issue, the Darabbanan, we're not going to apply to the Beis HaMikdash of Bimar Batuma, but they couldn't change the Midiraisa. So obviously, if something is tummy in the Beis HaMikdash, it's tummy. They can't take off the Tuma on their own. So that means that in Mashke Beit Ben Bachaya, Vechilo Gozer Rabbanan, what they weren't Gozer on, obviously, was only what was in their hands. And that is Tumuye Acherim, that they said in the Beis HaMikdash won't be betamei anything else, but when it comes to Tumat Atzmam, yes, yesh lehem. Omar le Rav Huna bar Chinina levrei, ki ayalta lekamider of Papa. So Rav Huna bar Chinina was sending his son to Rav Papa's yeshiva. So he said to him, you know, they're going to give you a bechina when you get in there and so on. You show off a little bit. I'll give you a question to ask Rav Papa, you know. So when you get there, why don't you ask him like this? Is it really true that Shmuel said that it's the Chan Milatami Tumata Cherimav, Tumata Tzmam Yeshlem, and that they could actually, for sure, would be Tame on their own, even in the Beis HaMikdash? Because if you say that, you run into an intolerable contradiction in a pasuk. Where's that? He's going to really take this to heart. Because it says in the pasuk, V'habasar asher yiga b'chol Tame lo yeachel. So when it comes to Basar Kadesh, the Pasuk says Beferish. If you have a piece of an Eila and it touches anything at Bechol Tomei, anything at all that is called Tomei, you must not eat that. Okay. Are these Mashkin Tmeim or not? Bechol Tomei. You say the Mashkin are Tmeim. And the Torah says if Basar Kadesh touches Mashkin that are Tmeim, you're not allowed to eat it. So where do you get off coming and saying the Rabbanan weren't Gozer in the Beis HaMikdash? It's a D'oraisa. Ask him that. Let him put that in his pipe and eat and smoke it, huh? So if the Mashkin can become Tomei, so then obviously the Basar that touches them, ipso facto, are going to be Aser. Omri Fshisha Bered Raviti, wait a second over here. I don't understand why that's true. Let's take a Ravi B'Kodesh, okay? We said before that the Kodesh can be a Ravi. Truma can only be a Shlishi. All right, but there is such a thing as a Ravi. Now, according to you, since it says Abasar Shi Yigab B'Kol Tamei Lo Yeachel, so then that would mean that if the Basar touches Ravi B'Kodesh, you're not allowed to eat it. But then that would mean it's a chamishi b'kodesh, an ad infinitum. So obviously there is such a concept of here and no further to the tuma. So maybe that's the point of the mashkin. The mashkin would be the equivalent of a revi b'kodesh, you know what I mean? So minit avi revi b'kodesh, says Ravashi. Come on, revi b'kodesh. That's the reason that revi b'kodesh is not called tummy. The reason that revi b'kodesh is called puzzle and not tummy is because of that very point. As we explained, the word puzzle means that the tuma in it is not detectable by a Geiger counter, by a tuma Geiger counter, because it doesn't emit any tuma radiation. So how can you call it tuma? Does that make sense? When you say it's radioactive, but you can't detect the radioactivity, it's ridiculous. It's a contradiction in terms. The word radioactive means it emits whatever it's emitting. The same thing is true of tuma. The word tuma means it's emitting tuma. So what does that have to do with the mashkin or tmeim? Then they're tmeim. Revi B'Kodesh is not tmeim. It's posel. But over here, it says tmei in the posik. It says yitma, tmei, okay? Right, okay. Okay, that is a good kasha, then I don't know. But anyway, so getting back to the issue of Rav. So Rav is claiming that there's no such thing as a tuma d'oraisa in the Torah on Mashkin. Those are big words, baby. Because the Torah says Beferish. I understand. V'chol mashke asher yishateh b'chol kli yitma. Can you read the pasuk? The pasuk says if there are Mashkin inside of a kli cheres and the sheretz falls into the kli cheres, yitma. Now, what do you understand that to mean? I'll tell you, says Rob. I understand the word yitma means to make something ro'ui to be mekabel tuma by being machshir it. That's what it means. Baby, no way. Because if we're talking about, go back to the beginning of the pasuk, okay, and tell me that that's what you want to say. It's nonsensical. Listen to how the pasuk begins. Mikol ha'ochel asher ye'achel. And now listen to this parenthetical comment. Mikol ha'ochel asher ye'achel asher yavo alav ma'im yitma V'chol mashkeh asher yishaten. Wait a minute. We just said asher yavo avmayim. You just said those words. Now, why are we repeating it again in the end of the pasuk to say v'chol mashkeh asher yishaten v'chol kli yitma? And that's what? That's repeating the din asher yavo avmayim? Come on. The pasuk is finished discussing heksher. It mentioned heksher parenthetically. Now you're turning around. You're claiming actually the whole point of the pasuk was heksher. So then why does it say heksher twice? Makes no sense. So how do you explain that? Now that is an interesting question, right? Because isn't that the point in the pasuk? You'd have to explain why heksher we know already from the beginning of the pasuk. Mireisha dekra mikola ochel asher yeachel asher yavo lamayim. Says Rab, no, I stand by what I said. The Pasuk is talking about Heksher. It is not talking about Tumas Mashkin. And nonetheless, it needs to repeat twice the din of Heksher because there are two different dinim. Okay? One is talking about Heksher in water that's inside of a kli. It says, Asher Yishaten B'chol Kli. I'm explaining to you why it says kli, darn it. You don't even understand why it's a kli. Except according to Rabbi Yehuda, which we're not talking about. So listen to me, and now you'll see something new. One part of the pasuk is talking about mayim that falls on it when it's mechuber. So in other words, let's say you have water that's on the ground or a river that's rushing by, and now a piece of meat falls into the river. So it says, okay, so water came on it. But what if there would be water in a cup of tea and you spilled a little bit of tea? Would that be makshir, or does the water have to be in a natural state in order for it to be makshir? So one of them is b'mechuber, and one of them is betlushim, and don't tell me I would be able to derive one from the other, because I cannot derive one from the other in either direction, and I'll tell you why. V'tzirichei. Let's say the Torah would have said the case of the telusha, b'chol kli. I would have said, yes, okay, obviously. If you took the water and put it into your teacup, so now you were machshiv that water, and therefore if that water falls on something, it will have an impact on it. But if it just falls into water lying on the ground that you were never machshiv, maybe it won't be able to be emalo. On the other hand, if you tell me water in its natural state, I would say, okay, anything in its natural state is more likely to impact something than things that are in an unnatural state. So maybe only mishum dekaimi beduchtai, only if it's in its place is it choshev. But if it is a teacup, water in a teacup, maybe water in a teacup can't be machshir. Therefore, says Rav, I say we need both of these psukim. Oh, come on, Rav, and what are you going to do about the pasuk? Ach mayan ubor mikva mayim yetahar. What does that mean? That means that water that is on the ground and is part of a natural source is tahar. But what if it isn't on the ground? Then it is not tahar. I mean, if it touches something, it can become tameh. So what are you telling me? Water can't become tameh if it says perish in the pasuk, it can. Nah, says Rav, yet tahar. That doesn't mean it is tahar and won't be makabel tuma. It means it makes things tahar. Did you ever hear about a mikvah? Well, let me tell you, my friend. This is the pasuk that introduces the idea of a mikvah. What does that have to do with being tahar or tameh itself? Okay, so that is certainly not the point. By the way, Rav, you said that telushim, water in a teacup, can be makshir midiraisa? Didn't Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina say that the mashkin in the Beit HaMidbachaya, and now we get back to the other issue, not is it enough of a chiddush to say that they are tahar in themselves, or dayan shein dechan, they even are not makshir things to be makabel tuma. Now, why not? If we're correct in saying that the entire idea of Yossi ben Yoezer is just that the Rabbanan did not assert a takana, this is not a takana. The Rabbanan can't change that. I mean, either it's going to be makshir lekabel tuma or not, unless you're wrong, and that things in a cup are not really makshir lekabel tuma midiraisa. And that's why, in the case of the Mashke Beit HaMidbachaya, where over there the Rabbanan said, look, since all of these things were in buckets and containers, they're not going to be Makshir LeKabel Tumah because that was only Min HaRabbanan. No, maybe what that's referring to is referring Dafka to the blood, but water actually would be able to be Makshir. But blood not, because there's another reason. They're midiraisa, it's not makshir. You know why? Because Dom Reb Chiba Rav Omer Reb Yochanan, minayin, how do we know that Dom Kachim in general is not makshir? Because the Torah says about Dom, ala oretz tishpechenu kamayim. And that means we only give it a din of mashkin if it is spilled out on the earth like water. Is the dam of Kutchim spilled out on the earth like water? On the contrary, you go ahead and you take a cup and you're mekabel the dam and it goes. So that, the Pasuk says, is not machshir. That's what it was referring to with the mashkebet mitbechai. But then the water could have been. So dam she'inu nishpach kamayim is not machshir. Matzkeva Rav Shmuel Barami. And what are you going to be doing with the dam of the Evorim that leaks out afterwards, or the dam that comes out after the dam hanefesh comes out, which you do not put into the cup, and there's tons of blood like that on the floor, and you're saying that mashkebet mitbechai is not machshir? Even that, it's not machshir. Amalei Rabbi Zera, please. Of course it's not machshir, but that's because Dom Tomtis is never machshir, even with chulin. That is something that's a completely different issue. Over there, afilo b'chulin namilo machshir, because the reason is, as Reb Shmuel Barami had heard himself from Rabbi Zer explaining, why would Dom Tomtis not be machshir? Because the place where the Torah compares Dom to the dinim of one of the mashkin is where it says, don't drink blood. So rak chazak levilti achol hadam ki adam hu hanafesh. So that means we're only talking about dam shanefesh yotzeba. That's called dam. But dam she'ina nefesh yotzeba, which is dam atamtzis, that is not called dam. And since we have dam chalalim yishte shtia in reference to dam, it means only the dam of the nefesh. And here it says that that does not apply. So therefore, that's no question. Now let's get back to Rav. I just can't believe it. You really think that Rav said that the there is no din of tumas mashkin? Can you explain to me how it says in the Braita, dam shenitma uzraka, that if the blood became tamei in the Beis HaMikdash and you anyway threw it on the Mizbeach, the din is like this. If this happens b'shogeg, so then the korban is kosher. But if it was done b'mezid, then the korban is not kosher. And all of this is to do, we're going to see later, has to do with the tzitz. The tzitz is meratza if the dam was tummy. Now, when it says that the tzitz is not meratza over here, if it was done b'mezid, that's only a drabonon. It does not allow you to bring another korban, because the rabbonon cannot tell you to bring a korban that you don't need to bring, because that's maybe chulin b'azara. All that it's nogea is whether the korban is kosher vis-a-vis eating the basar. Did the kohanim get to eat it? Did the bialim get? No. If you did it on purpose, then you don't get to eat it. Fine. Now, can you tell me what the heck you're talking about if there is no such animal as dam that's tummy? According to Rav, there's no such thing as dam as tummy. So why are we discussing something that doesn't exist? No. I agree that midrabbanan can become tummy. And even though this is the Beis HaMikdash, I guess this Tana is not going like Yosef ben Yoezer Yishtredo, who says that in the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't make that. I don't believe this. Take a look at this price. Okay, let's get into the issues of the tzitz, and then you tell me there's no such thing as tuma and dam. Look at the price. Amah tzitz meratza. Is tzitz meratza at the araisa? Yes, please. Thank you. It says v'nasav on hakodashim, right? Okay. So what is it meratza for? For blood, for meat, for the chalev, for the emurim, that became tame. That became tame, including dam. Bein b'shogeg, bein b'mezid, I don't care how that happens. Whether it's b'shogeg, b'mezid, b'ones, b'ratzon, whether we're talking about a carbon tzibur, we're talking about a carbon yachid. Later on, the Gemara is going to discuss, wait a minute, didn't we just say there's a difference between shogeg and mezid, and now we're saying makes no difference? True, but there's two different shogeg and mezid. Shogeg and mezid in terms of the tuma, that the tuma was shogeg or mezid, or shogeg and mezid in terms of putting it on the mizbeach, shogeg and mezid. Later on, we're going to make that distinction. Don't let that bother you. The bottom line over here is that it is saying that dam is tummy. Well, it's also midrabanan, but again, it's shalok Reb Yossi ben Yoezer will have to say. Oh, that's crazy. Look, read this brighter and see how we get to understand the nature of the tzitz, and you'll see that that's impossible. Toshma, v'nasa aharon et avona kodashim. Says in the pasuk, doesn't tell us what the tzitz does for us. All it says is that Aaron will bear the sins of the kodashim, not of the kohanim, not about eating the kodashim. Never allowed to. Tzitz doesn't allow you to eat something that's osur. It just says that the korban was mekubal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it doesn't say what avon. What are you talking about? Avon HaKadoshim. How do Kodashim have avonot? So what are we talking about? The avon, which avon? Avon of pigel? That it was shechted with a machshava. Pigel here means the machshava of chutz lizmano, which is not usually what it means. It was shechted with the machshava chutz lizmano? Says Beferish in the Torah, Pigel who lo yeratzeh. Don't tell me the tzitz is meratzeh if the Torah says lo yeratzeh. So scratch that. Okay, is it talking about the avon of notar? Now, the avon of notar is nonsensical because notar is only something that can occur after the korban has already been accepted. So obviously, it can't mean literally notar. How can it be meratzeh? What? Back in time, what was the problem? Notar doesn't make something possible. It can't possible a korban that's already been brought. Notar, in this case, means the machshava of notar, which is usually what pigel means. So basically, we're talking about chutzlah bekomo and chutzlah zmano. But the Torah says, lo yechashev. It's not considered to be meaningful to me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it can't mean that. There's only one thing left, and it makes a heck of a lot of sense. Tuma. And, well, obviously, we should have understood that, because tuma is the one thing that the Torah says, I am ready to accept in extremis. Where is that? Where the whole tzibor, the rove of the tzibor is tameh. So over there you can even go and bring the korban betumah. So once we see that the Torah has tolerance for tumah that does not appear anywhere else, it makes sense to say that the tolerance that we're talking about is even tolerance that will affect this din of the tzitz. So I give you the tzitz because I'm tolerant about tumah. So it means halo, eina nose, ela avon tumah, shutra michlala betzibor. Now you tell me which avon tumah, will you? Where is it important that something is tameh that I would need a tzitz to change whether it's a kosher korban? It's got to be dam, because dam is the matir. So what are you telling me, Rebbe Meir? Derabonan. Yeah, right. The whole pasuk about the tzitz and the ritzah, the tzitz, it's all derabonan? Says Rav Papa, well, no, there is an alternative. How about if it's talking about the komitz of a mincha? Now, the komitz of a mincha is not liquid. And therefore, it would be able to be mekabel tuma. And if it's mekabel tuma, it's the same thing to the mincha that the dam is to the korban. And therefore, it's telling me that the tzitz is meratzah on a korban mincha, which actually was tameh in its matir, which is the komitz. Okay, so that concludes right now our understanding of the machlokas between the Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah. We now understand the Mishnah of Rabbi Chanina Skana Kohanim. Everything makes perfectly good sense. We have basically three approaches. The one that we really enjoy is the approach of Rabbi Yochanan, who brings everything down to a fundamental question of what is the din of Tumas Mashkin Bichlal. That has led us into a whole discussion about Tumas Mashkin, and that is going to provide us a lot of fun tomorrow in trying to understand the lovely, I mean, it's the only place in Tanakh, it's actually amazing, in which you have the record. I don't know what the Goyim do with it, because it's an absolutely insane piece of Chagai, you know. But all this perek talks about a bechina. So Chagai has decided he's giving a bechina to the Kohanim that are about to work in the second Beis Hamikdash. Chagai had come up there. Chagai Zecharia Malachi. And the question is, are these Kohanim really able to pass a test, in which case we could give them smicha to work in the Beis HaMikdash, and we have the questions and the issues of whether they were right or they were wrong, and why were they right and why were they wrong. So here we're 2,000 years later, and we're discussing how to grade the Kohanim on their answers. It's going to be a very exciting daf tomorrow. Look up your Chagai a little bit in between to be ready to see if you can pass this bechina yourself. Kol Tov, everybody. Have a great, great day.